Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In the last episode, we heard a conversation with suspect Jack Linney. I must admit, my gaze is turned toward him. But before continuing down that path, I needed to look into another rather infamous serial killer who could potentially have been tied to the murders of Dana Stidham and Shauna Garber, one who was active at the time in the area. At another point in the podcast, you heard about a witness reporting a white van parked behind Dana Stidham's car during the early evening hours after she left Phillips Grocery. Two men were seen standing behind or near her car and that van. In January 2024, I learned from a law enforcement source that a white van had been connected to Shauna Garber's murder as well. It was part of an interview solving Shauna's case after 30 plus years, which will impact soon. That van parked behind Dana's car plagued my thoughts, bringing to mind one very specific, high-profile psychopath, Larry Dwayne Hall. Hall is a serial killer, yet he's rare in that he's never been convicted of a murder. One university study on Hall claims he could be responsible for upwards of 50 or more abductions, rapes, and murders. The guy is doing life for the kidnapping of 15-year-old Jessica Roach and transporting her from Illinois to Indiana for purposes of sexual gratification. The subject of the Apple TV Plus drama Blackbird, Larry Hall was arrested in October 1994 and has been in prison ever since. With his mutton chop sideburns and backwoods Gomer Pyle-like persona, Hall spent a considerable amount of time behind the wheel of his light-colored van, trolling for victims throughout the Midwest and South during the late 80s and early 90s. He claimed his extensive travel was centered around the Civil War reenactments he participated in. Hall often traveled with a man he was very close to, a co-conspirator in many of his crimes. Larry Hall's method of abduction is very similar to what we saw in Dana Stidham's case. And, according to some new information I've received, the kidnapping and murder of Shauna Garber. Hall often tooled around suburban neighborhoods in his creepy van, following women riding bikes, jogging, or walking, then grabbing them at just the right moment. A young woman alone with her car broken down on the side of the road would have been Hall's ideal situation to strike. Detective Lori Howard, who you've heard throughout the podcast, interviewed Hall a few years ago at Buckner Federal Prison in North Carolina.
I went and talked with Larry Hall, and I actually was worried when I talked to him that he might say that I did this just because he really wanted to please me. You know, I knew when I went in there, he probably wanted me to stay, and I knew that he wanted to talk. So I was kind of concerned that he would do just the opposite of what happened. I thought he might say, you know, yeah, it's she's mine, and I was concerned about that. What actually happened is I slid Shauna's photo across the table to him, and he immediately looked at it, and he said, she's not mine. I said, did you kill her? And he said, nope, she's not mine. So I was surprised. I really was concerned that that's not what I would get. So I knew immediately that Shauna was not his.
Hall warmed up to Lori. He came across polite, talkative, and rather open to the idea of discussing crimes he's been accused of, but has never been charged with. Detective Howard pressed Hall on Dana Stidham, considering how the circumstances fit, especially that light-colored van report and two men lurking around, potentially Hall and his partner. It can also not be overlooked that Pea Ridge, Arkansas, a Civil War historical site, is very close to where Dana's body was found. Hall, for his part, denied having any part in Dana's abduction and/or murder, and said he was not even in Pea Ridge near the time she disappeared. And did you believe him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Larry, interestingly enough, has the reputation for being a false confessionist, if you will. Although I don't believe that's the case by any stretch of the imagination. But he has that label.
The thing that nagged at me about Larry Hall and Dana's case is that Larry often worked with a partner close to him, a guy very close to him. And he also drove around in a van, the cliche.
He did.
And two guys who could fit Larry's description and his partner were seen in back of Dana along with a van on the day she disappeared. So that worried me. So what did he say about Dana Stidham's case?
He wasn't anywhere around during that time frame. He said, I wasn't there. There wasn't a reenactment. I actually checked all of that. So there was no reason to put him in the area at that time frame.
I've obtained never-before-heard interviews with Larry Hall and delved deeply into his crimes on my other podcast, Crossing the Line with M. William Phelps, in a two-part special outlining the monster Larry Hall truly is. You see, Hall had a penchant for young girls, kids, really, and he stuck mainly to the Midwest, Illinois, and Indiana, his home state, sometimes even going into Iowa. As you can hear in this excerpt from that interview, he also groomed some of his victims.
My friend Steve brought her with him a couple times in the car. She was a friend of mine. Steve's a friend of mine named Steve knew her. She was only 12 years old. She was missing too. He was a little bit older than me. I met him at a little shopping mall down there by Lebanon, Indiana, where there's a bus. The buses come in sometimes. Now, I met her a couple times, but I didn't know her mom or nothing. I used to hang out with him in a little park down there sometimes. You know, I don't remember. I didn't know the last name, but Debbie, I believe, but I'm not positive. I can't really remember.
The guy loved to play the ignorant card, but believe me, he knew and he remembered all of his victims. These guys, they do not forget. That's one reason why they sometimes take trophies, a little reminder of each and every one of their victims. As Detective Howard was interviewing Hall, he brought up another unsolved case, a big one.
The other thing is, he immediately turned around and told me, but I did kill the Springfield Three.
On June 7, 1992, the parents of 18-year-old Stacy McCall contacted the Springfield, Missouri Police Department saying their daughter had disappeared from the home of 47-year-old Cheryl Levitt, along with Levitt and Levitt's 19-year-old daughter, Suzanne Streeter. Upon officers' arrival, the Levitt house showed no signs of forced entry or a struggle, but the three young women were gone, as if plucked out of their lives in the middle of a normal day. All their personal property had been left behind. Purses, clothing, money, cars, keys, cigarettes, even the family dog. None of them were ever seen again.
And that, I had reason to believe there might be some validity to. And I say that knowing that it's not my case, beyond what he told me. But I know in his van, there was evidence that had a map, that had this area, that had Branson, that had an X on it. I know there was evidence to corroborate that, and there was a reenactment for those particular murders. But there wasn't anything in the van that would include Dana or Shauna.
Larry Dwayne Hall is evil incarnate. But I don't think the evidence supports him being the evil I have been chasing throughout this season. The reason Larry Hall has never faced murder charges is because, as horrible as it sounds, the guy was able to hide the bodies of his victims very well. And as you know, neither Dana or Shauna were really hidden. With all this evidence in hand, I could confidently exclude Larry Hall as their killer and continue down the road of Jack Linney. Previously on Paper Ghosts.
It seems to check all the boxes for a sexual predator. Going into the store with a hood on their face, standing behind the women, ogling them, making circles around the store, sneaking up behind them, waiting for them in the parking lot after work, following them on the highway, trying to pull them over, in some cases groping them.
I just remember being in the basement of this individual's house, and there had to have been like over 100 spools of different cords. I mean, I don't know who keeps cords. I don't keep cords, but it just was pretty ominous.
It's extremely difficult, but it's not impossible. None of them are impossible. If it was impossible, we'd probably stop trying, but this can be solved, and it will be.
My name is M. William Phelps. I'm an investigative journalist and author of more than 40 true crime books. This is season 4 of Paper Ghosts, The Ozarks. In getting Jack Linney on the phone, I saw an opportunity, maybe the only one I would get. Go at him hard, I told myself. Hold nothing back. Put the evidence from Dana's and Shauna's cases on the table and see how he responds. Like Brandon Howard, the journalist you've heard throughout the podcast, who, I might add, has built a strong case against Linney over the course of many years and helped me more than I can express here, I flipped back and forth throughout my investigation. I couldn't stop wondering if all this circumstantial evidence pointing to Linney was nothing more than a series of coincidences and an overactive sense of suspicion centered around a creep. I think you have to second guess yourself if you're doing due diligence. And I was reminded that law enforcement dropped the guy as a suspect in 1995 and never spoke to or pursued him again. Talking to Linney, however, began to change my mind. And it's hard not to take what happened during our conversations and the events that took place afterward as decades of pent-up guilt finally leaving the body of this cocky son of a bitch. I want to go back to that phone call you heard at the end of the last episode and pick up where we left off. So you have nothing to do with Dana Stidham's murder?
Hell no.
Did you know Dana Stidham?
Hell no.
There's the other case in Pineville, Grace Doe, Shauna Garber murder. What about her case? Any connection to her death?
Hell no.
Stark defiance and obvious anger, but within it, an emphatic, how dare you, sense of denial. At least at the outset of our conversation. You were interviewed a few times and brought in, and they searched your place and came after you pretty damn hard. Am I right?
Yes.
Why was that, you think?
I have no earthly idea. They were hunting for somebody for a scapegoat.
There are a few ways to deal with a hostile source, especially one who's a strong person of interest. I am not a cop, clearly, and I do not solve murders. My aim, always, is to develop new information and try to help families find answers. Then I hand that information off to those qualified to solve cases. Jack Linney was never going to like me, and I could not have cared less. So, I could use that personal disdain to my advantage. Repetition is a good way to get what you want in situations like these.
Did you kill Dana Stidham?
What do you think?
I think I don't know, which is why I'm asking.
Well, I don't either.
His answers become ambiguous and suspicious to a fault. Why not just say, hell no, again? Why the games? Why not say, look, you have the wrong dude. I didn't do anything. How can I help you? Why not hang up the damn phone? After all, he knew I was recording the call.
Now, if I might ask, the sheriff's office seemed to think that you might have actually known Dana Stidham.
Why?
Well, I have reports and statements and lots of witnesses that claim you hung around the Phillips grocery and that you knew Dana Stidham.
I might have. I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? Do you remember Dana? She worked at the store.
No.
I have a problem with this. Are you certain you didn't know her?
No.
Going back to his second interview with BCSO detectives Varner and Sidoriak, Linney was the one who brought Dana up and knew exactly who she was.
But why would they go after you so aggressively if you didn't at least know her or run into her at the store? I mean...
Because they were looking for a scapegoat. And they thought I would be the one. Because I was all over this area.
Okay. So you worked construction or something like that, and you were traveling all around Bella Vista area at the time. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying? Hello?
This theme of Linney going quiet on me would continue until something extremely bizarre happened.
No.
So you didn't work in the area?
Yes, but not then.
That's not true. Wasn't it in 1989, 1990, you were working in and around Bella Vista?
You're correct.
Okay, so you're saying that you had nothing to do with Dana's abduction and murder then? Is that your statement? Is that your response? You don't know who killed her?
Not that I don't know why she was killed.
For a guy who had started out our phone call by saying he knew nothing about Dana's murder, I began to understand that his temperament wouldn't allow him to walk away without explaining himself.
The reports, your interviews with the Benton County Sheriff's Office, the forensic evidence found in your vehicle, the cables and bindings found in your house. You were at the Phillips a lot. In fact, on the day she went missing, and you were reported as possibly talking to Dana in the parking lot. I gotta ask again, did you know Dana?
Somewhat.
From I have no earthly idea to knowing her, somewhat.
And then she's later found murdered. I mean, they seem to think that you were their guy. I'm just trying to explain all of these coincidences lining up against you. Sure you didn't see her the day she went missing?
No.
So this is all coincidental then? Circumstantial? You had nothing to do with Dana Stidham's murder?
No.
Are you sure about that? Because the evidence says otherwise.
As much to do with their murder as you did. Did you have anything to do with their murder?
It became increasingly clear as we chatted that the mere mention of Dana's case triggered a strong reaction, especially when I began to touch on the evidence. And yet, he would not hang up on me.
I live on the East Coast. I wouldn't have had the opportunity, but you did, sir.
All right. I might as well live in Africa.
Well, let's talk about Panama. You went down there. Did you have some trouble while there, while you were in the service with a sex worker? What happened there?
I remember I got in a little misunderstanding. I got in a little trouble down there with a misunderstanding. Some gal was wanting to know why the prisoners were kept when Noriega was in power down there.
A misunderstanding, he says. If you recall, I spoke to a sheriff earlier in the podcast who investigated the Panama allegations, and he told me Lenny beat a sex worker while stationed in Panama.
A little more than a misunderstanding. I mean, you were accused of beating a girl.
I thought you just wanted to know about Dana Stidham and the other. But you covered them all when I told you I had nothing to do with it.
Are you absolutely certain about that?
I guess I wasn't there.
But you were there on the day she went missing at the Phillips Grocery. That's pretty damn clear.
It has been so long ago, I don't even think about it.
So you're saying that you were never at the Phillips that day. Why would people place you there then? What is the evidence backing you up when others say different?
My word.
Your word alone. Could you talk to me about July 25th, 1989? What you did on that day?
I could, if I could remember anything about it.
So the sheriff's office came after you and questioned you hard to tell you that all these women at the grocery are accusing you of sexual harassment, following women on the way out, following them in your car.
That's what I understand.
He does not deny any of the sexual harassment he's been accused of. I moved on to a subject essential to my investigation, placing Lenny at the crime scene. I wanted to get him to say he knew where it was, because I knew he did.
What about Beale Lane, the crime scene up there by Ozark Beverage where Dana was found? Do you know where that is?
I don't know what you mean.
You don't know that area?
Not really.
Remember what he says there. It'll come back into play later on in the episode. At this point in our conversation, something really odd happens. He starts breathing heavily. Any mention of the crime scene, I realized, struck a nerve. I'd found an area of inquiry that rattled him.
Are you still there?
Are you still there?
I'm here. Are you all right? You feeling okay? Do you remember that time?
I forgot all about it.
Lots of people think you killed that girl. You've never been up to Beale Lane?
I told you. No.
Again, remember what he says for a second time. No. He'd never been up to Beale Lane. Not where is it? Or, I don't know where that area of town is, but a resounding no. This answer will become very important when we look at what happens the day after I speak to Lenny.
Lots of people say different.
They can think whatever they want to.
Let's talk about your ex-wife. She was interviewed by the sheriff's office. She told him a few fairly incriminating things about you. Like, you were acting strange around the time Dana went missing and around that time when she was found, her body, murdered. You got physically ill once when her case was mentioned on TV. How do we explain that? You there?
Thanks for that mess. We got a divorce.
She was scared of you. That's what I believe. What kind of person was your ex-wife?
He describes her by using an insulting racial slur, which I will not allow in this show. So I changed course.
You spoke with police twice. You admitted seeing Dana that day in the parking lot. You said you might have known her. You tell me you didn't know her. Which is it?
No.
According to the reports, you were well aware of this case as it was happening. After they questioned you a second time, they asked you to take a polygraph. There was a lot of activity around you for a time there. They were really hot on you. You know this. They came at you hard. Did you kill Dana Stidham? You there? Speak to me.
He doesn't say anything for about 2 minutes. Then?
You've got all this information. Then why did you ask me if you already knew? Kind of stupid, wasn't it?
I'm just asking questions. You don't have to talk to me.
I'm just answering you, too.
I wanted to be certain he was consenting to the interview as part of the podcast, so I put it out there again.
Well, I'm recording this for my podcast, Paper Ghosts.
I don't care.
You kill that girl?
I know I didn't.
It's important at this stage to go back to Shauna Garber's case. In the last episode, you heard a vulgar caller, who was later allegedly identified as Jack Linney, threaten to cut off the breasts of the woman on the other end of the phone. In early 2024, law enforcement revealed to me that Shauna Garber's killer cut her breasts off after binding her and injecting her with a hot shot, an intentional forced overdose of heroin.
No knowledge of what happened to Shauna Garber?
Who?
Shauna Garber.
No.
You never picked her up hitchhiking?
Never met her.
She was likely hitchhiking, was murdered, her body dumped on Oscar Talley Road in Pineville, Anderson, Missouri. You familiar with that area?
What do you mean? I don't know.
Several minutes went by with nothing but heavy breathing.
Did you kill Shauna Garber?
No.
I got a sense he was beginning to feel the weight of what we were talking about. It was clearly worrying him to dredge all of this up. It had been 31 years since law enforcement spoke to Linney. Here, now, 3 decades later, he's having a visceral reaction, a panic attack essentially, at the mere mention of these cases.
You okay? This interview bothering you?
And then, as things escalate, with his breathing increasing, he does something incredible. Something, in fact, you've heard him do before when the murders of two young women were put right in his face.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion.
...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes...
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
When we are anxious or stressed, we feel it in our gut. It's simple physiology. We've all been there. Uncomfortable situations and, dare I say, feelings of guilt can exacerbate a condition known as stress nausea. We've been down this road before within the investigation into Jack Linney. Remember that back in 1993, his ex-wife told Detective Danny Varner that when Dana's case came on television one night, Linney vomited. As my conversation with Linney continued, I could feel the stress coming from the other end of the line. The heavy breathing, odd silences, groaning noises, the fact that he did not hang up on me. It all said something about his disposition, personality, and attitude toward the murders of Dana Stidham and Shauna Garber.
Is this upsetting to you to talk about?
No.
So there's no way you had anything to do with Dana Stidham's murder? You all right?
About 3 minutes went by. He remained silent. But every once in a while, he'd let me know he was still willing to talk.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
You doing all right there? This thing bringing up a lot of old feeling?
No, it's not. I'm sick.
There it was. The conversation had made him ill. Not the flu or a cold. Talking about this was making Jack Linney sick to his stomach.
I did stop over there at your house when I was in Arkansas over the summer, but you weren't around. Knocked on the door there.
So?
Well, I was just letting you know. You know.
Why?
Just conversation.
I just seen you hang up.
There's no evidence that can tie you to Dana's murder. Is that what you're saying? I just want to get it straight with your, you know, what you're telling me. Is there anything you'd like to say to her family? Her mother just passed away.
So did mine.
Notice he doesn't say, sorry to hear that, or show any sympathy whatsoever. Instead, he takes the narcissistic route and makes it about himself.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. There's some people in law enforcement think you might be a serial killer. What do you think of that?
I don't.
You think they'll ever find the person who killed Dana Stidham?
I don't know.
You think the person is still alive?
I don't know.
He had nothing to do with her abduction.
How many times do I have to tell you?
And you've never been to Pineville, Missouri, frequent in that area, Oscar Talley Road?
What?
Oscar Talley Road in Pineville, Anderson, Missouri.
I don't know where it is.
Not true. He told the BCSO he used to pass by the area all the time when he lived in Missouri.
I was curious about a phone call. I have a report of a girl who took a phone call. It was a very vile phone call about a man who called and said all sorts of disgusting sexual things. And then they brought her in and they played her the tape of your interview and six other guys. And she picked you out of that lineup. Do you remember making that call?
No.
That wasn't you? Do you want me to stop by there next time I'm in the area and have a chat with you in person?
No.
Are you done talking about this? Is there anything you'd like to say?
5 minutes went by without a response, but I could hear him. He was nauseous and whimpering. And if you listen closely, you can hear movement. He's doing something. Any mention of the crime scenes produced the biggest reaction. Just how big, I was about to learn.
You all right? You okay? This subject seems to be upsetting to you. You okay?
He was vomiting, but the guy still wouldn't hang up on me. He blew his nose, threw up some more, breathed heavily, but he stayed on the line. And he had literally brought the phone with him into the bathroom.
Should we say goodbye now? Anything else you want to say? This seems very upsetting to you. I'm going to say goodbye now. I'm not getting any response from you. If there's anything you want to talk about, you have my number.
I hung up after about 10 minutes of listening to him breathing and trying to figure out his next move. And look, At this point, I certainly have not proven he had anything to do with either murder. The pressure I applied during this call might seem aggressive, but he has harassed women all his life. The fact that I gave it back to this bully in a small way, tough shit. You want to taunt women, abuse women, harass them, and foul them, and stalk them, and intimidate them? I am not going to hold back. This would not be the last time I confronted Jack Linney. After the call, I contacted the BCSO and let them know what had gone down. Then I called Detective Lori Howard and explained, ending by saying this, "Look, he's on the ropes. You had better get a few investigators over there, like tomorrow, to interview him." Lori Howard, along with Detective Rhonda Wise and an observer, knocked on Linney's door the following day. And you know, what a difference 24 hours can make.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I obtained a recording of the interview Lori Howard conducted with Jack Linney the day after I spoke to him. However, because Linney did not consent to me using it, as he had from my calls with him, I need to summarize.
So, I need to know if I can pick your brain. I'm here to talk about a gal by the name of Shauna Garber. I'm hoping you can help me go back, because I...
After introducing herself, Detective Howard mentioned Shauna Garber, which was her doorway into what Linney had to say about Dana. Linney used the word scapegoat yet again. What's important is that he sounds different. He's laughing and joking, being a smartass, almost gloating when he talks to Lori. Lori asks him, if you didn't know Shauna or Dana, why did the BCSO just randomly pick you to drag in for an interview? He says, quote, I was at the Phillips grocery store a lot. Lori then tells Lenny, the BCSO has his DNA, which he interprets as a sample he gave them back in the day. She clarified by saying she believed that they had found his DNA on Dana. He shrugged off the statement. He then mentioned that I had called him the day before, referring to me as a joker. Here's Lori explaining her interaction with Lenny on that day and several days after the visit when he began calling her incessantly.
And then he just reminds me that he is a killer, and he never once told me that he wasn't a killer. And so, you know, I basically reprimanded him and said, well, you know, essentially, I don't hear you're a killer if you're not going to go into detail and tell me about that. So he switches gears, and I think it's probably in an effort to regain some power or control. So he tells me, you know, I'm a millionaire. And he said, why haven't you been back to see me? And I said, well, basically, I've been in touch with you, or better yet, you've been in touch with me, and you still don't have anything that I need. And so he said, are you at home? And I said, yes. And he said, are you by yourself? And I lied, and I said, no. And he said, well, I only kill people that are by themselves. And I said, so if I was by myself, essentially you're telling me that I would be a good candidate. And he said, I just ask if you were home and alone.
At his house that day, Lori asked Lenny what he would do if the BCSO showed up at his door with an arrest warrant. Lenny said, quote, if they try to get in, I've got a .38 fully loaded that I sleep with. Now, if you recall, he had told me he had no idea where Dana was found. But it was when I started talking about the crime scene, the one he allegedly had no idea of, that made him physically ill. A day later, talking to Detective Lori Howard, he explained exactly where Dana was found, admitted to being out there, and even mentioned how badly her corpse smelled, referring to the smell of decomposition as sickening. And the reason for his DNA possibly being at the scene, which Lori had floated, he said would be because he urinated in the woods near where Dana's body was found. As they discussed the crime scene, Lori asked why he didn't tell anyone from the BCSO he had been out to the scene and saw Dana's body, which would have explained why they had his DNA. He said he didn't want to get involved. Days later, during one of more than 10 phone calls Lori received from Lenny, he says to her,
I'm not afraid to give answers. He said, I'm going to die. And I said, well, before you die, why don't you tell me what you know I want to hear? And he said, I know you've worked hard. And I said, I have worked hard. I've dedicated my entire life to this kind of thing. I would like to wrap this up. You know, these girls are deserving. And he said, I know. I'm not afraid to die, and I'm not afraid to talk. And I said, well, apparently you are. And he kind of got snippy with me a little bit, you know. Well, I'm giving you answers. And I said, you're not giving me answers. So we went back and forth with that just a little bit, and I said, I'm going to go. But if you want me to come talk to you and you want me to come see you or you want to continue to call me, then it's not good enough that you're just telling me you killed somebody. He also told me that the same person who killed Dana killed my girl. He referred to Shauna as my girl. He wants to tell you he's a killer. He wants to tell you he'll kill you. He point blank said it to me. If you're by yourself, I would be there. I would kill you.
The big takeaway from the conversations Lori Howard had with Lenny was that he admitted to being at the crime scene while Dana's body was out in the woods, but only after she mentioned that the BCSO had his DNA. Near the end of what was a two-hour conversation during her visit, Lori asked Lenny if he thought of himself as a psychopath. He responded by saying he was a crazy kind of guy. So, She countered by asking him if he ever felt remorse. And he said, "Why should I?" To which Lori responded, "That's exactly what Dennis Rader said to me."
He called me the other night. He said, "I never said I wasn't a killer." And I told him, I said, "Well, it's not good enough. It's not good enough for you to tell me that you're not a killer if you're not going to tell me who you killed."
In February 2024, Linny called me one afternoon. I waited a day and called him back.
"You called me the other day. I was wondering what's going on."
"Who is this?"
"This is M. William Phelps. We talked a while ago. I'm an investigative journalist looking at Dana Stidham's case. I called you and we recorded a phone call for my podcast, and I saw that you called, so I was wondering what's up."
"I probably just misdialed. I didn't want anything."
"Oh, you didn't want to talk?"
"Nah, why should I? I don't know anything."
"You don't know anything about those cases?"
"I don't know anything about anything."
"Have you spoke to police lately or anybody like that?"
"What do you mean recently?"
"Within the past 6 months? Year?"
"I talked to somebody the other day."
"Oh, you did? What'd she have to say?"
"She was working on another case and she don't know if I knew anything about it." "I said, no, I don't know anything about that or Dana Stidham either."
"So, you know, Dana Stidham, we were talking before and you said you didn't have anything to do with that."
"No, I didn't. I got blamed for it, I can tell you that. It ruined my reputation in Southwest Missouri."
"How did it ruin your reputation?"
"Because everybody thought I did it."
Nobody even knew the guy had been questioned. His name, unlike Mike McMillan's, was never brought into the case publicly. That's just more bullshit spewing from the mouth of a guy who spewed a lot of it and likes to play games.
"What about the, we were talking about the crime scene."
"I did not talk to you or anybody else because I don't know anything. You're not too bright either. You think I know something. I don't know anything. I've told you that time and time again."
"Your name is on a lot of the reports. How come they came after you so hard? They searched your house as well and your car, right?"
"Right, right. That didn't mean a damn thing."
"Well, they found blood in your station wagon in the front seat."
"Now, if I killed somebody, you think I'd load them in the front seat?"
"I don't know. I'm not a killer."
"I'm not either."
"Are you?"
"What did I just get to tell you? You're not too damn bright if you don't understand English."
"What about the bindings they took from your house? Rope, wire, that sort of thing."
"Big deal. A lot of people have ropes and stuff in their house."
"Ropes with a murder victim's DNA on it?"
"It wasn't on it."
"I think that's yet to be determined."
"Well, then what the hell are you talking to me for?"
"Well, you called me. So I'm calling you back, and I'm asking you why you called. You wanted to talk to me? I'm just being respectful here. You know, I want your opinion. I want your voice in what I'm working on so you can explain yourself. That's all.
Why should I explain myself?"
"They questioned you a number of times. They questioned your ex-wife, you know, your kids. They looked at your background, you know. They searched your house. They searched your vehicles."
"What did they find? What did they find?"
"They found blood in your station wagon."
"Whose blood?"
"Well, you tell me. Why would you have a bunch of blood on the carpet of your station wagon? I've seen photographs of it. That's a lot of blood."
"So?"
"Where would that blood come from?"
"Who knows?"
"You know. It's your car. If there was blood found in my car, I'd know where it came from."
"Well, you would, but I wouldn't."
"How come?"
"Why should I?"
"Because it's your vehicle."
"Big deal."
"I believe there was blood also in the back seat of the car."
"So?"
Is that Dana Stidham's blood?"
"There's blood in a packing house, too."
"There's blood where?"
"In a packing house."
"Is that Dana Stidham's blood?"
"How should I know? Is it your blood?"
"It's not my blood."
"How do you know?"
It was a stupid comeback, and he knew it. You might be wondering if that blood was ever tested. I asked the BCSO, and despite luminol tests showing blood all over the place inside his vehicle, which the crime scene photos I have depict, as well as indications of blood cleanup, I was told there was not enough to test. Linny was combative this time around, I'll give him that. So I decided to touch upon the subject which had caused him so much anxiety last time. See if I got the same response.
What about the Beale Road crime scene where she was found? We were talking about that before. Did you ever go walking through that woods, or did you hunt there or anything?
More of the same. Silence and noises.
Hello? I think you went quiet last time we talked about Beale Road in the woods there. From what I'm told, they have your DNA found out there. I think this happened last time we chatted. I asked you about Beale Road and the crime scene where Dana was found, and last time you got sick. This time you're just silent. I guess I'm gonna hang up now, if you don't want to talk. You have my number, you called me, so...
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's rare that as you work on cold cases, in the capacity I do, a case breaks wide open for you as you are investigating. But that is what happened. As I worked on this final episode, in early March 2024, Detective Lori Howard and Detective Rhonda Wise, with the help of others, finally solved and officially closed Shauna Garber's murder. in what was first thought to be a gruesome manner of death, as I had mentioned, turned out to be false. Shauna's breasts were not mutilated after all. Thank God for small mercies. I had been told about this new suspect, Telfy Reeves, during the summer of 2023. The guy was a real shitbag and hit every marker your average psychopath would.
There was never any manner of death in the autopsy report. The strangulation was supposition based on a lack of other things. But yes, having worked a great deal, my partner, Deputy Wise, and I, and especially lately, I'd say within the last 6 months, we have spent every day, all day long, working on this. And the reason is because we've developed a suspect. That suspect is no longer alive, unfortunately. But what it did do, when he passed, it opened some doors for people to come forward that wouldn't come forward prior to. So this suspect, in Shauna's case, and for now I'm just going to call him TR, but I anticipate a press release coming forward very soon. So he is now a suspect. I now have people talking. I have, finally, I think, I say I, but we have placed it and put it all together in the puzzle that it is, and I think we got it.
That press release did come on March 21st, 2024. And this narrative you are about to hear regarding Shauna's murder fell in line with Shauna seemingly being in the wrong place at the wrong time, with the devil lurking in the shadows. We've discussed the likelihood, and we now believed that there is likely no connection to Dana's case.
What we believe happened to Shauna, she aged out of the foster care system. And as we found out, she was adopted early on, somewhere around the age of 6. Her adoptive parents, we call it a failed adoption, because Shauna had a lot of mental and a lot of physical problems. She went back into the foster care system. Somewhere around 85, 86, she left a foster care situation. The caseworker is known to have told family members that she was going to go stay in Oklahoma, which was a piece we didn't have for a long time. But she was going to go stay in Oklahoma because she had family there. We searched to a dead end, basically, on the family members in Oklahoma, which made me at first question it, but then I realized we're probably not talking about her biological family. We're not even talking about her adoptive family. More than likely, we're talking about her last foster care family's extended family, because that's really all she had. So she winds up in Oklahoma, interestingly enough, in the Vinita Claremore area, which is not too far from the Missouri line. We later learned that she was being transported via a work program, via a van, back and forth to a job. Now, we were initially giving bad information, which threw us off again. We were told that it was a different area and that this was in Kansas. It wasn't. But we figured out that the van that she was taking back and forth from the Vinita Claremore area was taking her more than likely to Hudson Foods. Hudson Foods was bought out and is now Tyson Foods, but it has always been in the Knoll, Missouri area. It's in McDonald County. It actually is less than maybe 2 miles, a mile and a half, from where she was dumped. That van was taking her back and forth from the work program back to where she was staying in the Vinita Claremore area. However, on one occasion at least, she wasn't on the van. I don't know exactly what happened, but she didn't wind up there. And we were told by a witness that says TR picked her up while she was walking along that highway, which is consistent. Everybody walks Highway 59, going from Tyson's Knoll or Hudson Foods Knoll over to where she would have been found walking and where we were told she was picked up. So that's all consistent.
There are no pictures of Shauna Garber from her childhood, teen years, or later, save for one photo when she was about 4 years old. Her toothless smile, short hair, and overall joyous expression obscuring horrendous abuse before she had even entered into the foster care system. By March 2024, Lori had finally latched onto, at least partially, one of the ghosts she had been chasing for 15 long years. Here's Detective Lori Howard again.
The other thing we have put together, Ginger Blue, especially in the 90s, was a beautiful vacation spot. It had a gorgeous inn. It was a thriving place. It had a restaurant and a place to stay. But towards the early 90s, I should say back up and say in the 80s, it was flourishing. But when you got to that 90s area, it had gone downhill some. And she, Shauna, had a material that was in her pocket. I looked at that material for a really long time and determined that it was a cloth napkin. And I could never understand why she would have a cloth napkin in her pocket unless she was working at a restaurant. Or perhaps she was hungry, grabbed a roll, grabbed bread, and put it in her pocket to go. We know that she had a towel wrapped around her head in coax cable.
Right.
That towel was, it's consistent with the kind of towel, the color of towel that they had at the inn. They also had an old TV system, of course, back then, cable TV, with a short coax cable attached to each one of the rooms, each TV that was in each room at the old inn. So it's consistent to say that she, at some point in time, had ended up there around that October-ish time frame.
Did TR work at that place?
He didn't work there, but he passed it every day.
There was the answer to the coaxial cable and towel wrapped around Shauna's head.
That stretch of highway, you really just can't get very far without going one direction or the other on that stretch of highway. It connects, well, 59 runs all the way from Anderson all the way through to Knoll and on end to Arkansas.
So he picked her up on the road while she was hitchhiking or something.
Well, she was walking. And I don't know if she had missed the van and she was wanting to stay in that area, if she literally was just looking for a place to stay for that night, or if she was trying to get a job there. That's still kind of a mystery why she was walking that night, because the van would have picked her up, you know, dropped her off in the morning and picked her up in the evening after the shift. Could have been that she just was tired of working and tired of living where she was living and opted to go a different route.
And TR, you know a lot about him. And
not a great deal.
He was a bad guy. Am I right?
He was a terrible. I have one witness, five sources, and I personally knew the man. And everybody that has ever known him, and I'm going to be one of those people, he was evil. He was pure evil. He ran drugs. He used drugs all of his life. He had two children that passed from gunshot wounds. He had an ex-wife that had a hellacious life, by all accounts. I mean, just by digging into his life with her. So I can't imagine having this person around me. And now I can imagine why nobody really wanted to speak.
Right.
Because why would you?
I mean, Shauna crossed paths with the devil.
She did. She most certainly did. And you know what? Of course she would. Of course she would.
Yeah.
If there was a wrong turn, the girl took it through no fault of her own.
Right. The invisible girl.
the invisible. She's completely invisible. And I say that because there's no one cared enough to even take a picture of her. And I don't know why that bothers me so, but it does.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you develop information that TR picks her up, and what happens?
He has a person of interest with him at the time. We were able to determine through both a witness and other sources, now five other sources, we've been able to corroborate the story that he takes her. Now, remember, this is a drug-fueled frenzy, spun-out mess with somebody that I've been told is almost bipolar, can be seemingly somewhat normal and then just angry. So angry that you're terrified to be in his presence. So he picks her up along with another, and he takes her up the road, where, by the way, he lives. You can see his home by looking directly across from where she is. And he binds her with what they have in the back of the vehicle. I think the coax cable was done initially to wrap her face so she wouldn't see what was happening. So she wouldn't see where they were going. So she wouldn't see where she was, because I don't think he cared whether he saw her face and how afraid she might have been. I've been told that that just would have made things better for him. So I believe he did it to keep her from knowing where she was going. I think he took the towel from the inn. He used the coax cable, which I always thought was odd. Right. Couldn't figure out why anybody, especially somebody that's a serial killer or basically a farm boy, either one, somebody local, you wouldn't tie somebody with coax cable. It's the worst possible medium. But I think he did it just because he didn't have anything else at the time. Put it across her face and neck. And that's where that entered in. Then also from the inn, she had the napkin in her pocket. He took her up to the road. They tied her the rest of the way with what they had in the back of the vehicle. I now know who that vehicle belongs to, which was a hang up for a while. They raped her, and she was screaming so badly and so, it breaks my heart, but she was literally screaming so much that you could hear the echo down the valley. And it scared them.
This explains the screams on Halloween. Lori Howard and Rhonda Wise spoke to six different sources, none of whom knew each other, each telling the same story. This is how we know we have the absolute truth. This next part, for me, exemplifies and truly displays the sociopath's absolute pathology, who they are.
And so my witness says that he's laughing as he's telling this story later on in the evening. But they start to get nervous because somebody, they know that there's a party down the hill. They know that's a bunch of kids. They know it's a Halloween, but they start to get nervous. So he overdoses her, which, by the way, come to find out, is a pretty standard practice, because I'm told this wasn't his first victim.
So he gives her a hot shot.
He gives her a hot shot.
And then what does he do?
My witness states that she believes, and this is according to what TR says, that he props her up, and she says she thinks that it would have been on an old spigot, an old water spigot. I don't know. I can't confirm that. So I don't really want to say that that's the case, but essentially she's propped up somehow. Why? I don't know. And then TR and person of interest leave. They then go and talk to someone else, and they're talking about everything that they just did to her, and they're laughing, and they think it's funny, and they're reliving every moment. Now, remember, this just happened. And so what happens the next morning, my witness goes next door, or I should say up the hill, and sure enough, she sees everything that she thought she would see.
And Shauna was dead.
Shauna was dead.
And did they mutilate her at all?
No. The story that was given by one source stated that she had her breasts removed or sliced. I've had more than one source come forward with TR and say, no, he did not cut her breasts off.
Okay. Thank God. For small things. Wow. So
yeah,
I can understand why witnesses would have been afraid of coming forward until he died.
They were terrified.
And he died a horrible death, right? I mean, he died in an accident, a vehicle.
He did. He died in a vehicle accident. I'm told it was a horrible death.
Good.
And you know what? I'm okay with that. And I know that sounds callous.
No, it doesn't.
But on the other hand, my feelings for Shauna, in any case that I work, but Shauna in particular, and I'm told I look like Shauna.
Shauna was like a daughter to you.
She was. She absolutely was. I took her with me everywhere I went.
You did.
And that's because I didn't want to lose her again. I had to find her in the first place.
And you solved the case.
Nathan Smith was no longer the Bentonville prosecutor. He left the office during the time I began this case years ago and finished my work in 2024, taking a job on Walmart's legal team. But the last time I spoke to him about the cases, he said a few things that I think sum up this season very well.
Well, look, I think that, first of all, I appreciate you doing the story, and I know there's a lot of cases around the country that are cold and have families that want answers just as badly, but it is so important for these cases to not be forgotten and to not be just shelved. And so one of the things that's important is there could be someone listening who knows something, who knows someone who is related to someone that maybe their entire family thinks, you know what, he's always acted very suspiciously and has all these connections. And I would just, for the sake of Dana's family, I would just beg them to get that information to law enforcement or to someone who can use it. Because oftentimes in cases like this, it can be small things that make the difference. It can be a small key that unlocks a door to an avenue that no one knew was there. And we have to value human life, and we can't simply forget about it because it's old and it hasn't been solved yet.
Finding answers and resolution in cold cases requires persistence and patience. In the end, as one case was solved, the other heading in that direction, I hold on to hope that someday soon Dana Stidham's family will get what they deserve. Justice. Subscribe and follow the show to keep up with bonus episodes coming soon. If you appreciate the work I do on Paper Ghosts, follow my other podcast, Crossing the Line with M. William Phelps, where I approach new cases each week in a similar fashion. I want to thank every one of my sources and those who took the time to help, sit in for an interview, or discuss the case with me. I can't say enough how much journalist Brandon Howard helped me out, and I thank him immensely for it. I also want to thank my Paper Ghost production team, Catherine Law, Rose Bocci, Matt Russell, Brandon Dicker. Paper Ghost Season 4 is written and executive produced by me, M. William Phelps. Script consulting by Rose Bocci. Sound design by Matt Russell. Executive production by Catherine Law and audio editing and mixing by Brandon Dicker. Takaboom Productions. The series theme, number 442, written and performed by Thomas Phelps and Tom Mooney.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.